You're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com or on our podcast. I'm Aidy Packham and this show is brought to you in association with OldFootballShirts.com. Well, the last week has been largely one to forget, with defeat at Ipswich followed by a draw at home to struggling Sheffield Wednesday. But myself, Alan Wares and shirts guru Phil Shelley, we don't want to talk about that. Instead, we are going to be talking about a man who played 217 times for the Albion, scoring 14 goals between 1987 and 1993. In a career that started at Chelsea in 1978, he also had spells at Swansea, QPR and Watford. Watford at Lynn Oslo and Bournemouth, in fact. Yes, it's the man over there. It's Mr. Gary Chivers. He's there. He's there. Talk to us.
How you doing?
Morning.
What happened there, mate? Oh, it's technical problems.
Yeah, I know.
AD's had a technical.
You even came in and practiced.
I did, yeah. I can do it now if you like.
Go on then.
Ooh, Gary Chivers on your radio, yeah.
Yeah, that's a little jingle for our friend Gary Chivers here, who was once... Well, it has been commented upon that he might have had a little bit of a resemblance to old Radio 1 DJ Gary Davis.
He still does, actually. I've seen pictures of Gary Davis, actually, and he's the same bloke.
It is.
I had to do some research on this one, and just let you know that it was originally Ooh, Gary Chivers on the plastic pitch.
There was, yeah, at QPR, when I used to play at QPR. I used to say, Ooh, Gary Chivers, Ooh, Gary Chivers. And then I met Gary Davis as well, a nice guy.
Yeah.
And we have got similar sort of faces.
Perfect for radio.
Well, have you got the same amount of talent on the football pitch?
I think I was slightly better than him. Sure. And he was half the size of me.
And do you think that you're better than him now on the radio?
I don't think he does radio anymore. He's gone missing, hasn't he?
He's probably back on one of those, sort of local Heart or, you know, Piccadilly or something.
Well, don't they stick him on the boat and stick him in the ocean somewhere, you know?
We can only dream.
He's probably on Radio Norfolk or something like that, but Radio Fab FM, a bit like us. Anyway, we've got Gary Chivers with us, and we're going to be talking about his career, his time at the Albion, and what he's doing now. We might as well start at the very beginning. You started at Chelsea, which is a very, very different club to what it is now.
Yeah, I mean, I was there at Chelsea as a 10-year-old. So I went through the ranks, was there for a number of years, and then it came to a certain age in my life when I was 15, and I had like three clubs to choose from, which was Arsenal, Chelsea and QPR, and I chose Chelsea, and I signed apprentice 1976, and then went on to play from 1978-79 onwards to 83.
Cool. And I mean, it was you also, whilst you were at Chelsea, I was doing a bit of research. You were actually nominated for the Match of the Day goal of the season in 1980-81 season. You didn't win, but...
Yeah, I actually came second to another Albion player, an old Albion player, Justin Fashanu.
It wasn't. It was Tony Morley.
Was it Tony Morley? I thought Justin Fashion you won.
I think it was the season before that.
Yeah, that was 1980. That was the goal against.
But I should have won anyway. It was a great goal.
Describe it, because I can remember the Justin Fashion goal and I can remember the Tony Morley goal, because Tony Morley was a great winger for Aston Villa. What did you do? Shanked it from 25 yards?
Yeah, off my head. That's why. Top right hand corner.
As goals go, it was actually a tap in, wasn't it?
It was a team goal. It started from their corner. I headed it out of the near post, carried on running. And there was a bit of interchange of play. I kept on running, and all of a sudden, a cross came in, and I whacked it in from 6 yards. Couldn't miss, really. But it was the killer goal. You know,
Who were you playing?
We were playing Newcastle. We were 4-0 up with 5 minutes to go, so that really killed him.
But it was,
I remember, hang on, I remember. Is this, you won 6-0 in the end, is that the
we
one?
We won 6-0, yeah,
Peter Barotta was in goal. That's the thing I've got sort of stuck in my head, is Peter Barotta. They got all the, never mind sort of showing the cameras on the goal scorers, they just got on Barotta sort of going, yes, loopy, this is at the bridge, isn't it?
Oh, yes, and sadly, he died last year.
Did he?
But he was a lovely, lovely... absolutely crazy fella.
Well, goalkeepers are, aren't they?
Yeah, but you just never knew what he was going to do. In fact, he was one of the first keepers you had that actually came out of their area to head the ball.
All right.
And to actually try and play football, but he couldn't play. I mean, he was useless on the ball, but a decent goalkeeper.
Full marks for effort.
Yeah, no, he was brilliant. He was absolutely brilliant.
But this was, of course, back in the days when the goal of the season award was actually meant something. It was actually voted for by the public rather than some random ex-pro.
But just think of the number of goals that you didn't get to see because the Match of the Day cameras weren't there.
Absolutely, yeah.
I mean, sorry, Gary Nelson, hello.
You played in that game.
You must have played in that game. Nelson's beat about 16. Hang on, did you say he started in 88 here?
Yeah.
I came deadline day.
It was
in
March.
88.
It was March.
Right,
88.
So no, Gary. Chiv wouldn't have been here.
No.
No, Gary Nelson, I'm sure he probably told you several times, he beat about 15, 20...
It was 56 players.
56 defenders.
And the supporters.
And the supporters. And I think probably even circumnavigated the low-flying planes before smack it into the top
And who
corner.
Was it against?
Brentford.
At
in the
Griffin
Cup,
Park. Yeah.
At Griffin Park.
It was one of those goals that about 50,000 people saw. Oh, but there was only about 5,000 people in the stadium that day.
It was great. But
Nelson was on fire that year anyway, didn't he?
He was. What was he like to play alongside? I mean, because he just comes across as a lovely fella. His books are a really good reads. I mean, is it a nice bloke?
Yeah, he was a nice guy. He's quite an intelligent guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice bloke. And not a bad footballer. I mean, he had a great career. He played a lot of games as well.
Sure, yes. I think he's still kind of a big hero at Charlton and Southend and Plymouth. So, you know.
And here, don't forget.
And here.
It was like
we'll get him on one day.
We've got Gary Chivers on today.
we're just going through the ghosts of Gary Chivers' past here, aren't we? Okay.
Well, I just want to touch on a couple of other things but before your time of coming here. When you left Chelsea and went to Swansea, now that was under John Tosak, who obviously went on to be one of the great managers. So I mean, what was it like working under him?
Yeah, he was good, John Tosh. He was okay. We had some great, great players. Bob Latchford, Alan Curtis, who you see now in the dugout at Swansea. Ray Kennedy. Who was the most decorated man, meaning football medals, not obviously war medals.
These days it would just be tattoos.
There was some great players down there.
Well, that was in the autumn of his career, because I mean, at the time, Swansea, I think for a time, Swansea were actually top of the league, weren't they? I mean, was this the same season or the season before?
It was the season after, as it goes. They was right at the top of the league, and then there was
beat Leeds 5-1 or something like that, and it was just rampant football. They were just
a decent side. They were a really, really good side. They had some decent players as well. Leighton James,
but Gary Chivers,
but it was a good side to play in. But it was a very very, very experienced side, and really he needed to rebuild. But unfortunately for him, the funds had run out.
They were kind of just sort of papering over the cracks by having so much experience and not a great deal of youth. Is that the...
Well, while I was there, I was only there for 6 months. I had 6 managers in 6 months.
That's no good.
They sacked Tosh, then they brought in Phil Borsma, his understudy, then they sacked him, and then they brought in Doug Livermore, then they sacked him.
Yeah.
And then in the end, the secretary was running the club. And then they brought John Toshack back.
Mm, and that's eventually Swansea went down. They came down with us.
Yeah.
The same season.
Well, they dropped like a stone, didn't they? They went all the way through the divisions
Actually,
after that.
They did, yeah.
And then after that, you went to QPR. You had 60 games there. That was on the plastic pitch as well.
That was on the plastic pitch, yeah. I nearly went to our enemy. They always used to come in for me.
Use that word.
Yeah,
Don't swear.
CP. I nearly went there. But then I went and actually spoke to Alan Muller. He was their manager.
At that time.
And then I spoke to Terry Venables, and I ended up going to QPR, which was good. It was like an education. I went there in 1983, so I was 23 years of age. But I actually went there and learnt football.
Why did you choose QPR over Palace? I mean, we know why we would, but why did you choose QPR over Palace?
Because of Terry Venables.
Really?
He was unbelievable. He was the best coach I've ever worked with.
Yeah. Better than Barry Lloyd. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not answering that one. But he was there. No, he was brilliant. He was absolutely... He thought about everything. No stone went unturned with gamesmanship or things you've done on the pitch. His set pattern of play. And our youth team manager at the time was a fellow called George Graham, who actually used to train the youth team for about half an hour and then go and watch Terry work, because Terry working with the team was unbelievable. And his tactics changed from game to game. He had different ploys for different teams, and it was brilliant.
So keep you on your toes.
Oh, well, we played at Stoke one year, and he was the first one really to play with the Christmas tree formation.
Yeah.
You know, 4-5-1. They couldn't get the ball off us, so they went 2-0 up. And we just kept the ball.
So, I mean, since then, Terry Venables has kind of got this, I think, unfortunate reputation, a bit of a geezer, a bit of a wide boy and things like that, but you just saw that the professional, you know, sort of hard-working fella, or did you see the geezer as well?
With Terry, you had a bit of both. Had a bit of both in the dressing room. I mean, it was great. And then sometimes he'd pull you aside and he'll have a little chat with you, and he was the bloke. He was sort of like your friend. But everyone had a respect for him.
Right.
You know, and the way you trained so professionally.
You didn't mess with him.
No, you didn't mess with him, but you had respect for him as well. His tactics were unbelievable.
Sure.
And how was it for you on the plastic pitch? I mean, obviously for like clubs like Brighton, going there, you're not kind of used to it. But playing on every week, was it because these days the artificial pitches are completely different to what they were then.
Yeah, I mean it was the old chairman there was a guy called Jim Gregory, who was a bit of a second-hand car dealer, and apparently they should have laid about 12 inches of sand on the plastic pitch, but they didn't. They cut it in half and they laid 4 inches of sand.
You didn't do maths, did you?
No, after the 8 inches went missing, it was like playing on a concrete pitch. And when you went down on it, you took the top layer of your skin off. In fact, we signed an old player, Mickey Robinson, and I went into a tackle one day. Mickey Robinson was sub, and I took the top layer of my skin off, and after the game, he came straight up to me and he said, "Tell me, if I ever slide tackle like you again," he said, "slap me round the head," because he said it made me feel physically sick.
What, you seeing had skin burns and
skin coming off? Yeah, but that was Mickey for you.
Was John Byrne there at the time as well?
Johnny Byrne came from York. We played York in the cup. John Byrne played up front for York, and he had such a good game. He was a talented lad, good up front, held the ball up. And after two impressive games for York, we signed him, and he done well for QPR as well as later on in his career.
Was that the same time that York beat Arsenal in the cup?
I think it was. I think that was the
as the story goes, I can see the fellow's face. He played for Southampton, then moved to Arsenal. Steve Williams gave away a penalty midfield. And point blank refused to apologise afterwards, and the rest of his teammates were absolutely livid with him, and I think that's what knocked Arsenal out of the cup that time. On the days when you could actually play football on snow-covered pitches.
Oh, happy days. Yeah.
But Johnny Byrne had a great talent of running with the ball, and especially on the artificial turf. It was so hard to get the ball off him. And I remember Johnny Byrne, we played against Chelsea one game. He went round six players on the plastic pitch, but unfortunately missed the goal. when it was easy enough to score the goal. I mean, it would have been goal of the year or goal of the century, but...
if the TV cameras were there.
Yeah, if they were there.
Was he wearing highlights then?
Johnny always loved a highlight, yeah. He always loved a highlight, yeah.
Okay, but you were 60 games there, and then you moved down the road, or up the road to Watford, and that was under Dave Bassett.
Yeah. Harry had always tried to sign me. I don't know why they call him Harry Bassett, I suppose, but he'd always tried to sign me when he was at Wimbledon, and... He came in for me a load of times, and I always said no, I didn't fancy going to Wimbledon. But I came to the end of my career, really, as far as I could go at QPR, and I thought going there would reinvent myself, but it was a very, very difficult time. I just got rid of Graham Taylor, and it was still the underlining thing that Graham Taylor was still there. It was hard for Dave Bassett. I think he only had about 6 or 7 months, and then as soon as Dave went, I actually turned around to him and said, look, don't leave me here, get me away. You know, I don't want to stay here.
Yeah,
there was a very, very funny club.
We were talking before the show and about your run-ins with various celebrities. Well, I guess Elton John would have been there at the time. So
Elton John was great. Elton John was fantastic. He was great for that club as well. He piled a load of money into it. And at Christmas time, he would actually go to a hotel and he'd go on the old jam and get on the old piano and sing. Yeah,
free gig.
He was brilliant. He was absolutely brilliant. And when Brighton came back, when I came back with Brighton to play, he actually knocked on the door, Elton John, to say, "Look, listen, hope you have a good game and come and have a glass of champagne afterwards."
You weren't getting changed at the time.
I wasn't getting changed. No.
All right, we'll draw a line under that
just,
one.
When are you going to come down? Come on, keep up.
I am face palming. Okay, but you did eventually come to Brighton, and you were actually dropping down a league to come here.
I was dropping down too.
Oh yes, because Watford did actually get relegated that season as well. Yeah. No, we're in the same league offer. Yeah.
So Watford were at near the bottom of the old First Division, and Palace came in for me again, and I went to Palace.
Flicked Visa them again.
And then I came down to Brighton. And then I had the initial talks, and I was about an hour late, I think, for the talks, which was quite bad, really. Would you believe I couldn't find the ground? So I was
it's
going around.
You're
but
okay
no
now.
One
it's
else,
not there now.
No one else. Yeah, I'm still going there, but no one else knew where the ground was, and I was about 45 minutes late, which was quite embarrassing, really. And I waited in the reception, and they said Barry Lloyd would be coming to speak to you in a minute, and I didn't know what he looked like. I didn't know what Barry Lloyd looked like. So someone come in and said hello, and it was Barry Lloyd. And I went, oh, yeah, hi, how are you? And I went, who's that? And they went, that's your manager, or could be that your manager.
Says something, so, doesn't it?
God. Well, no.
Was it something about the club or about you?
No, he was fantastic. So I went in there, and we had the initial talks, and we sort of agreed that I was going to come down, but no one got in contact with me for another 3 or 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. So then I thought I was going to go to the dreaded enemy.
It was the manager or, then. It was the manager at the Palace by then. Do you
I'm
remember?
Not sure. I'm not sure if it was Copple.
Was it Copple? Yeah, it was Grady.
But then Dave Bassett got back in contact with me and wanted to take me up to Sheffield United. So I was in a quandary what I was going to do. And then, just before deadline day, I got the phone call for Brighton. And Brighton came down on deadline day, round my house, with a
bag full of money.
Well, it was a bag full of money. I don't think it was a lot in there as it goes.
Yeah, probably a bag full of toffees or...
But he came round with the secretary, yep. And I signed on deadline day. And I signed a blank contract on deadline day.
What does that mean?
Completely blank. It was...
You never got paid?
I agreed my fee. I agreed what I was going to get wages-wise. Uh-huh. But I had a gentleman's agreement with Ron Pavey, who was the secretary at the time.
Who would have honoured it?
100%. Although saying that, when I did get my contract back from the club, it was completely wrong. So I went into Barry Lloyd and said, listen, this is not what we agreed. Yeah. So if you're going to do this, I won't kick another ball. So it's up to you what you do. And he went, no, it's totally honest. Ron Pavey come in. No, we didn't agree this. We didn't agree that. We didn't agree that.
Right.
And everything was sorted out.
I was about
to
say, because when you said, I mean, bearing in mind that the way the club was going by then, and it wasn't that far, because if we're talking about 88, we're kind of just at the start of a few people coming in who weren't necessarily having, you know, the Albion's best interests at heart. Mm-hmm. So when you said, you know, we had a gentleman's agreement, and I thought, blimey, hang on, this sounds a bit iffy. I mean, you'd have done well to stick around. But when you then said, oh, it was Ron Pavey, you think, okay, well, that's because Ron Pavey
was a man
was
of his honour. You could tell that. I mean, he was a great guy. Bless him, he's not with us anymore.
Absolutely,
But he was. That is the secretary you want. He was just straight as a die.
Sure.
And I came there for the last... funny enough, I went back to Barry Lloyd, and I said, what do you think of our chances of going up? We've got 10 games. We're lying in 6. Mm. And I think he said, well, I've had a little look. He said, I think we could get into the playoffs. Bearing in mind we're laying in...
This is the back end of the third division season.
This is the back, yeah. So my first 10 games for... And then I agreed a promotion bonus. a few grand on top of that promotion bonus.
Right.
Bearing in mind we had 10 games left and we won 7 and drew 3.
Yeah, well, your first game here was at home. A 0-0 draw at home to Grinton. Like you said, we were sick. And yeah, I mean, we went on to... It was a flying finish, wasn't it?
Oh, it was a great finish.
Yeah. 7 wins in 8 at the end. I think the only one was a draw at the end up at Chester. We were 2-0 up.
2-0 up, yeah.
Yeah, Wendy scored twice.
Yeah.
And they pulled it back. But I just remember this, on the train back, I think we'd had an early kickoff or Notts County, I think it was, were having a late kickoff and they lost. And we've just leapfrogged into second place. We went at home to Bristol Rovers. Boom, we're up straight away.
And bearing in mind, we went to Notts County as well over the Easter period.
Yeah.
And beat them at Notts County.
Yeah,
and that's when I found out. That's when I found out our match bonus, which was incredible at the time. I think
it was high or low?
Oh, incredibly low. Incredibly low. I got caught at the bar. I got caught at the bar, and all the players came in. I'd only been there about 3 weeks, and all the players come in, and I went, "Do you want a pint? Do you want a pint? Do you want a pint? Do you want a pint?" Because you all had a beer afterwards, obviously. Do you want a pint? Do you want a pint? And they went, "Have you seen your match bonus?" And I said, "Exactly the same as you." I thought, I can't wait to see it. We're on a great run at the moment. It was 35 quid.
But you could have still got the round then.
I was out of pocket. I was out of pocket by the round.
Right, so you thought, don't Brighton. Win next week, lads.
Oh, it's incredible. Yeah. Incredible.
Phil, hang on, Phil.
Yeah, so I've got one question, Gary. You were talking about contracts and you signed a blank contract and it came back and it was wrong. I know football fans always... think they know what's in players' contracts, but go on, give us something in a player's contract that we might not realise would be in a player's contract.
Well, it all depends. I mean, with me, it was just a loyalty bonus. You had a loyalty bonus, which was really deemed as a signing on fee. Hmm. So it all depends how well you negotiated your contract to how much you would get. But you'd get promotion bonus. And on top of that, you'd get a win bonus, obviously.
So for every match you win, you get an extra bit in the pay packet that week?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what we used to do in our time. I would think that it'd be the same now.
Well, we intend to have David Burke in the studio in the next few weeks. Mm. So it'd be interesting to, you know, hearing what you're saying about contracts from 25 years ago and contracts now. I mean, he's not going to give us sort of specific details, but it'd be interesting to sort of see.
I don't think it would have changed a lot, though.
I think Stefan Schwartz, I think it was, when he went to Arsenal, he had something put in his contract that said he will not be shot into space, because once upon a time he had actually put somewhere down at the line that he'd love to be an astronaut. So it was put into his contract. He would love to. He cannot be going into a NASA space rocket. True.
Beat that, Gary.
No one can beat that.
No, you're looking at me as if it's still last night, AD.
I wonder if the PFA backed that up.
That would be hilarious, wouldn't it? I mean, he obviously signed it.
Yeah. yes. But I mean, there were some great players in that Albion side as well. We mentioned Gary Nelson earlier on, but Alan Kerbishley was still there. Was he there then?
Yeah, Kerbs was there.
I mean, what were your memories of that particular run in and getting promotion?
Well, getting promotion, obviously, I got my bonus. I was happy, more happy than the rest of them, because I think I got more than them. Well deserved as well. But we had some decent players. The decent players that have played at a higher level, you know, like you've just mentioned Kerbs. Kerb, I think they got from Aston Villa. Mm. I think he came from Villa, and he was a decent player, Kerbs. He knew the game. He was sitting in midfield. You had Dino out on the wing, who. Really, I think his best position would have been in the centre of midfield.
I think he did play there now and again.
Later on in his career, I think, yeah.
He was never a flying winger, was he?
Well, he didn't have a fly in him. He didn't have no pace, bless him.
He wasn't there then, was he?
Yeah, he was Dean Wilkins.
He came in 83, then went to Holland, then came back to us. Something like that. He was at QPR for a short time as well.
Only as a kid. Yeah. He was there as a kid, and then he came away, came to Brighton, then went to Peck Zwolle.
Yes.
Out in Holland, easy for me to say. Yeah. And then came back.
All right.
But we had Kevin Bremner up front, who was a wholehearted player.
Sure.
Steve Penny.
Steve Penny was always injured, but I think he played in the running. I think he played 7 or 8 games into the running, and he was a massive boost.
So who were your fellow defenders? Who were you playing alongside?
Keith Dublin.
Keith Dublin was on the left-hand side. Big Doug.
Yeah, Doug Ruby. Loved,
yeah, Big sort Doug. Yeah, great, great fella. Really, really good fella.
Where is he these days?
And Gats.
Steve Gatting.
Yeah, Doug's gone back to Aberdeen. The Granite City. Yeah, he's from there anyway.
Got ya.
But Doug was brilliant. Doug was great on the training field, because your first time training, and it'd be ice out there. It'd be minus. Doug would have a t-shirt on. You know what I mean? Thinking it was summer. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Compared if he's from Aberdeen, it's probably still considered at the tropics. So.
Oh, it was. Yeah, but it was,
I don't know if this is the case, but I always liken Doug Ruvig to someone like Guy Butters, just this man mountain who's as soft as, I was going to say a swear word, but as soft as something begin soft. With bright, yeah. But an absolute sort of beast on the pitch. Is that him?
You've nailed him, yeah. You've nailed him in one. He was great to be around. He, like you said, he was very, very quietly spoken, but he was like Muttley. He was always giggling in the corner. You know, he was always chuckling in the corner. And for him to chuckle, I mean, he was 6'4".
Yeah.
He weighed about
Adam.
15, 16 podcast. Stone.
Yeah.
And if
not exactly mobile.
No, and if you wound him up enough, he would kick. I wouldn't like to be on the end of one of his kicks. And I think you got the best out of Doug when you done that to him.
Yeah.
Mm. But at the end of that season, it was very touch and go going into the Bristol Rovers game, which was the last game of the season, which we had to win to get promotion. And
as it transpired, I think a draw would have done.
Yeah. But I mean, it was celebratory scenes at the goals. It was the biggest crowd at the goals. Yeah, massive.
Yeah. Oh, massive pitch invasion. Yeah, it was great. Absolutely great.
Pitch invasions terrify you?
No. You always look for the nice spectator lady coming on, don't you? You go and jump on her, really. Yeah. But
they're supposed to jump on you. Rip your shirt off.
No. Especially when you're celebrating like that. And like I said, for me. My 10 games, my first 10 games, and culminating in us getting coming second and going up.
Yeah.
And with Watford coming down, vindicated my move, really.
Sure.
I mean, my one memory of that game was like all the players coming out into the director's box and all the fans on the pitch, and Keith Dublin coming out wearing nothing but his... And as a young boy, no one needs to see that.
In fact, do you remember that front cover of Goalseye? There's Gary Nelson. He's got his both hands raised to the ceiling, but his hands are about to the sky, having just scored, and his hands were probably about 3 feet apart.
Mm.
And I don't know how politically correct it is, but there's the word, the speech bubble. He said, "Honest God, I saw Dubbers in the shower, and it was this big."
But yeah, I mean, well, actually, when I was doing the research for this, I got thanks to Heine and his brilliant Seagulls programs website.
Absolutely, yeah.
There was the pre-season friendly against West Ham, which was, I think it was the first game of the season after, and there was a picture of everyone celebrating in the dressing room, and that was a similar image.
Did Chiv just have his trolleys on?
He
as
wasn't.
Well?
Fortunately for him, he wasn't in that picture, but.
No, but I didn't have my trolleys on. No, I just had me. I was
tackle out. Was it?
It was. It was bouncing around somewhere, I think.
Still is.
But it was a great time, and it was a great time for the club. Really, I mean, especially coming from Watford, going there, and getting up, and it was like the club moving forward. We had to move forward. I mean, I think they heavily invested in the team. I think Barry changed most of the players that season. You know, they had to get him off the old wage bill or get him off the old contract. So he brought in a lot of players, and he got them up.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, what were your opinions of Barry Lloyd?
Barry Lloyd was quiet. He was always good with me. He was.
You eventually got to recognise him.
I eventually got to recognise him, which was good in the end, because after all, he picked a team.
Yeah.
But he was always good with me, and he'd come over and ask your advice. He'd ask you questions. So he was good with me.
Hmm. He just came across as a fellow who always, his facial expression was always someone who looked like they left the gas on.
He was always deadpan, and before the games as well. Before the games, he would come in and he wouldn't actually say a lot. You know, he wouldn't actually say a lot about the opposition. First off, he'd come in and he'll go, "Well, don't worry about them. Just worry about what we're sure. doing." You know, which sometimes is okay. But in other times, you want to know more about the opposition.
Sure.
What sort of formation?
Have you got a winger that's going to come flying at you? That
kind
of thing.
Definitely.
So was he a man manager or a tactician or a bit of both or a bit of neither?
A bit of neither. A bit of both and a bit of neither, if you get what I mean. I mean, because you're forgetting Brighton at the time. I mean, when I first went here, we used to train at, I think, Amarin caravan site. I mean, when he showed me the... when we went down to the training ground, there was ruts into the pitch. If you'd have run across the pitch, seriously, it was like a sniper had shot you. You'd see people going down where there was massive holes. Yeah, it was horrendous. Yeah. Absolutely horrendous. And the equipment and the balls that was with the club, I mean... Listen, you play at QPR, the balls were changed every couple of weeks. You'd have new training balls.
Yeah.
You come to Brighton and you're really just kicking about with a bladder. And my first day's training, Jock, bless his soul, the old
Jock Riddell.
Oh, what a ledge.
Yeah.
I know.
It was lovely.
Another one. Yeah, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. But Jock was everything. Jock was the kit lady. He was the tea man. He was the man who used to concrete the floodlights. Jock was everything. And all of a sudden, my first day's training, I remember going to the training ground. And he walked in with a plastic bag with all stuff in it, emptied it, and all the players just grabbed what they could. And I said, I turned around and I said, "What's that?" He said, "That's your training kit." So I looked, I had one sock. So I said, "What's, you are joking, you are definitely joking." No, that's all the training kit, you ain't got no training kit. So I had to train in Martin Inchwood's. So Martin Inchwood didn't train us that day. Barry Lloyd trained us. I trained in Martin Inchwood. And I just said to him afterwards, I said, "Listen, I've never, ever been to a club like this. I mean, this is joke city."
There's a bit of a shambles then.
Shambolic. Absolutely.
So they invested in the team, but not in the kit.
They invested in everything else. But, I mean, the balls, like I said, the training ground was horrendous.
Yeah.
Absolutely horrendous.
It's amazing you got promoted.
Yeah, but I think that was much of a muchness in it, and there was such a, I don't know, a divide between like the Championship and the Premiership like there is now, but at least you had decent facilities.
Yeah.
And the facilities at Brighton were pretty poor.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was. I mean, the Goldstone was becoming a little bit ramshackle at the time as well. So, I mean, you could tell by the general infrastructure around the club.
Well,
I mean,
most of the terracing was
closed. Yeah, the East Terrace was, there was like half of it was shut, wasn't it?
I mean, and that's only because Jock couldn't probably repair it. Do you know what I mean? He was probably doing 90 other thousand jobs at the time.
Well, this is it. This must have been quite demeaning to you guys, is that you were playing at a time when attendances were just crashing through the floor. I mean, there was still the ongoing violence. You still had the fences up. I mean, that changed obviously after Hillsborough. But I mean, it must have been sort of pretty galling to sort of think, well, hang on, this is a club that used to get 25,000 and 8,000 have just turned up. Even that Bristol Rovers game, there wasn't 20,000 people there, even though the ground could easily
14,
host it. I mean, it must have been sort of 14,000. Yeah, it must have been quite galling.
But it was worrying to see where the club would end up.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
So when it did end up, I don't suppose you were totally surprised when, you know, in the mid 90s when it went crashing through the floor.
Oh, I was so sad. Yeah, you know.
But you weren't surprised, I don't suppose.
No, but it was going in that direction, and all you wanted was someone with the foresight to come along and stick a bit of dosh in.
Yeah.
Which we've got now.
Well, our fella did. He put 56 quid in and then tried to sell it down the river.
The truth is, when he came into the club, though, that's exactly what we thought was going to happen with him and Stanley. We thought, well, here's your chance to be our Roman Abramovich, our whatever.
Yeah.
He had the money, he had the wherewithal, and of course, what happened is obviously history.
Well, this is the weird thing, is that, I mean, I consider Gary Chivers to be of a given generation, and then you've got the torture years, the war years were a different one, and actually there was, you say you left here in 93,
yeah,
and the extraordinary general meeting to actually have the Articles Association removed and the club, the ground to be sold, took place in November 1995. I mean, it all came out in 97. Sorry, the EGM was November 93, and then it came out that the ground was sold in 95. So actually, there was probably a very close... It's that close that you could see how badly the things were getting. So I guess that you were still here when Bill Archer actually took over.
Yes. Yeah, I think he'd just taken over. But it was a difficult time, and Barry Lloyd got more caught up on the other side.
Because he was the managing director as well, wasn't he?
He was the managing director as well. So we didn't see him on the training pitch. And it was Martin Incher would turn up. He didn't know the future of the club. He didn't know what was happening. It was very, very worrying
times. Did you get paid every week?
I had to arrange one month. I had to get onto the PFA to pay our wages.
Mm.
But the PFA had lent, well, was supposed to lend money out. And they were lending money out to other clubs at first with no interest.
Right.
And I think they got knocked a couple of times. And of course, we come along and I think they charged us astronomical amounts of interest.
Wonga.
To pay our wages.
Sure. So, I mean, this is the point. So, for people who are actually trying to sort of work out what happened with the Archer thing, you've got to realise it was actually something that was sort of, you know, trickling down over the years. And like I said, when you started the club in 88, you could see empty terraces and you could think, Christ, this place is going nowhere, is it?
No.
Okay. No. Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com and on our podcast. As usual, this show is brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com, and Phil Shelley of oldfootballshirts.com is here today. And we've got T-shirts of the week today, haven't we?
Well, two and a third story, yep.
I mean, what can you tell us about this one I just brought up on the screen here?
Right, well, if you want to go around the corner, Gary, and have a look at the shirt on the screen, I'll explain it. I'll pick this one out.
From where I'm looking, it looks like to be a bright yellow shirt with a black V, is that? I'm just looking at the screen at the angle. And with, was that Posterbon written on there.
It's a Man United rip-off kit, isn't it?
Basically, but is that, because I'm looking at the funny angle, is that yellow?
Yes.
That is yellow, yeah.
Okay.
It's very yellow.
Okay, so what are we to say about this?
Right, well, I picked it up because it was one of the most viewed shirts on our website this week, oldfootballshirts.com. It's a 2013 away shirt of a Colombian team, Atletico Nacional. They're in the Colombian Premier League. Their nickname, did this for AD because he likes doing the Spanish words, and he's given it to me to do. Their nickname is Los Verdolagas. Which is the Pearl Sains. Pearl Sains is a type of succulent salad leaf that grows in abundance in the Pasha region of Colombia. The plant has yellow, white or red flowers, hence the colour schemes for the club's home, away and third kits. It's also worth noting that Pearl Sains is a treatment for the condition oral lichen planus.
There you go.
So you've got a team that's, their nickname is the Salad Leaves.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's Crystal Palace. But we do have another one. Gary, if you can just come have a look at this one and see if you can actually remember this.
Ah.
What we've got is just
crawling around. It's not a football.
Oh, fantastic!
It's not a kit as such.
That is worth bundles. Yeah.
Okay. Especially as it's not true necessarily, is it?
I mean, this was at the time when it was Goldeneye. They brought out a load of special T-shirts. There was Johnny Crumplin, Football Genius.
Perry Digweed, and there was
Dean Wilkins.
Yep.
And there was this one, which was a certain bloke called Gary Chivers. We've got a Maltese international. But you never did play for Malta, did you? What was the story behind that?
Well, the story was my dad was Maltese. And what happened was they got in contact with the club. I think there was a guy from Southampton that was something to do with the Maltese FA who got in contact with the club. And the club verified that my dad was Maltese. So then they phoned us up. I'd done a couple of radio interviews, and obviously my Maltese is not up to scratch, really, with yes, no, and sit down. As
a bit like Adam El Abzi.
Yeah, a little
so
bit
if you
like
had a Maltese
that.
Dog, you'd be fine.
Well, yeah, and what happened was, I actually done the deal beforehand to go and play for Malta against ERA in the World Cup, but it got stopped at the last moment in time. Because they said, have I ever lived in Malta? No, I hadn't. Have I married a Maltese girl? No, I haven't. And they said, well, that you can't qualify. But that was quite funny because we were playing against ERA, and I'm not being funny. You could, if you could qualify with them if you had an Irish wolfhound.
I mean, the real football anorak knows the nationality of every Irish player.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it was incredible. But I would have loved to have done it. I think it was 1991.
So you'd have been playing against Budgie, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Well, Budgie was more or less sub when he had Aldridge up front, but it would have been great to play in that game.
That's because he was doing his hair. He didn't have, it wasn't ready.
It would have taken a while.
And I think they got beat 2-0 anyway.
So and they never asked you again?
No, that was it. That was the end of it.
So that was their qualification. It was Maltese FA's qualification. You must have lived there. You must be able to speak it.
Yeah, or have you married a Maltese lady?
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And none of them are qualified.
So
none of them said yes to him.
Your dad's Maltese?
Yes.
But the surname is... Is that an anglicised version of it?
No, we changed our name. Dad changed the name.
So you weren't born with the surname Chivers?
No, we're born with the surname Chiberas.
So it's an anglicised name you've got?
Yeah, Cibrras.
That's pretty flair.
It is flair, actually. Yeah. I'd have actually sort of like, you know, come over and played here as that name. That would have been... We could have at least pretended we had a flair.
I don't know why he changed it, but he changed it in 1970. So...
Was he not persecuted, but was he taking the mickey out of for having a foreign name? Do you
think it was difficult from when he was brought up in the 50s and probably 60s when he first came over. He came over in the mid 50s,
right?
So it was difficult for him to get a job and things like that. So he changed his name later on in life. But
okay. Phil, sorry, you're champing at the bit to say something here, mate. Yeah,
there was one question I was going to ask. We were talking about shirt of the week earlier on, and I asked Gary last week if he could bring one of his playing shirts along to use as shirt of the week. And Gary told me
They'd all got stolen. I gave them to
Phil Shelley.
Who since sold them? No, they all got stolen. I gave them to get framed about 10, 12 years ago. That was me, the one I wore at Wembley, my QPR shirt, my Chelsea kit, my QPR when I played in Europe. So there was about 8 or 9 shirts, and I gave them to a guy who said he was going to frame them for me, and I gave him all the shirts, and he went missing. I'm not being funny. If you walked into my house now, you wouldn't know what I've done before because I don't have anything hanging up.
No knickknacks.
I just worry about next week or tomorrow. Sure. I never really look in the past.
Whilst we're still talking about shirts, we've got to mention some of the horrendous efforts that you would have worn over the years.
Oh, brilliant. They were great.
Andy Pandy shorts in particular.
So yeah, tell us about that. I mean, what was it like going on the pitch dressed as Andy Pandy?
Well, you're talking about the blue and white ones, are you?
Yes,
the Tesco bags.
The
Tesco bags.
And the striped shorts as well.
Yeah, it was...
That was Barry Lloyd's idea, wasn't it?
But was that TSB, wasn't it?
TSB
was the sponsor. I'm not sure if it was like, but I didn't actually mind that one. The worst one was, and I'm not too sure, I think it was down to Jock more than anything else, was the pink effort.
Which one? The playoff final one.
Yeah, the playoff final one.
Chewitz
wrapper. Because I think it was actually orange until Jock got hold of it and washed it, bless him, and it came out pink. Because I'm sure his washing skills weren't up to the standards of...
His concrete
skills. Yeah, his concrete skills.
Well, we had the Raspberry Ripple one as well, which is a Nobo one, which is...
Oh, yeah.
Weren't the shorts that Chewitz wrapper? Weren't the shorts Chewitz flavour?
Yes, they were. Yeah, yeah. It was diabolical. Absolutely diabolical.
So that's not actually. It was probably more of a collector's item, is to frame the shorts. I mean, clean, obviously, but...
And of course it didn't help because it was a pink kit with Nobo written across it, or Nobo. Yeah. So it was difficult, but off you go.
So, I mean, obviously you would have got a load of stick from opposition fans regarding that. So, I mean, obviously it's just water for ducks' back, is it, when you play?
Oh, you're used to that. Yeah, you're used to that. I've had spectators run on the pitch after me before. I don't know if you remember when we played in the semi-final of the playoffs. Against Millwall. I had two of them run on the pitch then, trying to get you.
I suppose right backs, actually, because they're so close to the touchline, get a lot of grief anyway.
You get a lot of bit, but I quite like that. I quite like having a bit of banter with the fans, winding them up. Yeah, you got to wind them up.
My memory of that game was the Millwall fans knocking off a policeman's helmet, stuffing it with newspaper and setting it on fire.
Fantastic. That's Millwall for you. Talking of kits, one of our players at that time, and I'm sure a good friend of yours still, his shorts went from blue and white stripes to red.
Yes.
In one fell swoop.
Yes.
Now, Gary's going to tell this story, but if you're going to listen in, maybe have a sick bucket beside you. Gary, tell us all.
Well, do you know what team were we playing?
West Brom.
It was West Brom, yeah. It was West Brom. And I got the ball.
Yeah.
And I passed it back to Perry Dibley, our keeper. And I left it a little bit short. Mm-hmm. Well, I left it a little bit short, like I normally did.
Yep.
And...
Gary's bit
in the middle.
Crashing into him. Perry kept hold of it, and the next thing, got the ball, kicked it straight out of play, and I thought, Perry, what are you doing? And he went, look, and I'm going, what are you on about? Look, what are you doing? Just keep it on the island. Just kick it down the wings instead of kicking out. And when I looked at his shorts, I mean, they were just red. Mm. I mean, they were completely full of blood.
Mm-hmm.
And the next bit you'll enjoy.
Yeah.
The guy had gone into him with his foot, and he'd actually split his private bit right from the top.
Are we talking the sofa or one of the chairs?
We're talking the sofa.
Right.
Yeah.
Down the middle.
Right down the middle. And the blood he lost was incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they didn't just use gaffer tape and strap it up and start again.
He couldn't run it off. That's for sure. There was no way he was going to run it off. But he was quite pleased with the swelling.
Yeah. Aww. Nearly two pairs of shorts. So Perry Digweed, the man with a knob that looked like a seal asking for a fish,
Oh, it was incredible, yeah. And he went straight to hospital. He lost.
Really?
Not really.
he lost pints and pints of blood. Yeah. They had to give him a blood transfusion. But that was Perry all over. I mean, I remember playing at Millwall again, and just before the game, we were warming up, and Perry was a little bit of a practical joker, you know, so I'm flicking with the other captain, and all of a sudden, just before the game, just before we kick off, he comes running up to me and he says, Chiv, I'm injured. And I'm going, what do you mean you're injured? Just get in goal, don't mess around. We're going to kick off in a minute. No, I'm injured. He pulled his calf muscle. That's when I started
in goal.
I started the game in goal. Yeah.
Oh, was this one where was it John Keeler?
Mark Beeney.
Mark Beeney was
in the stand.
And he was elsewhere, so wasn't he?
No, he was in the stand as Mark was good at eating a steak and kidney pie.
Good man.
Yeah. So he was on the steak and kidney pie and probably another hot dog because he was a big lad.
Yeah.
And what happened was they brought you were allowed to change the team sheet. So he changed the team sheet, Barry Lloyd, and he put Mark Beeney as sub, me as goalkeeper, and brought on John Crumpling to right back. And then after 10 minutes, Mark Beeney come on, John Crumpling went off, and I went to right back.
It was two subs then, wasn't it?
No, one.
It was still
one. Yeah, it was just one sub. And I went on, played right back, and we won the game 2-1.
So Perry was a bit of a liability then, wasn't he?
Yeah. Well, Perry was a really, really good keeper.
Yeah.
But it's so unfortunate. I mean, I think during his whole career, I think he played about 160 to 170
and
games.
He didn't play for 10 years, wasn't he?
I think he was slightly longer. I think he was 12.
Yeah.
Well, he was perennial understudy, wasn't he? For Graham Mosley and then Kilo. And
the thing is, and then he became an actor.
Yeah, he was.
Well, he's got something else in common. He became a chauffeur, didn't he? He was working for Mohammed Fayyad.
Sheikh Mohammed. It was Sheikh Mohammed, yeah.
Right. Okay, yeah.
And he got me a job there as well during the summer.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah, so he was driving there.
He was in The Mean Machine.
That's
he
it.
He played one of the prison guards.
Reserve and Vinnie Jones, wasn't
that's
it?
That's it, yeah.
Okay, but I just want to talk about that next season after the promotion year. I was going to whiz through a couple of the highlights. You scored your first goal, which was away at Oxford for us.
Yes.
Then you did, there's another game where you actually scored. It was actually, unusually, a game against Palace on Boxing Day.
Fantastic. Corner from the left-hand side, swung in. Gavin Neblin was marking me, which was it was a big guy. Gavin Neblin, South African.
Never heard of him.
No, South African, big guy, been at Palace years, probably played about 90 games or something like that. Mm-hmm. It weren't sort of like a regular. I span it, turn round, hit it right hand post, bang.
Yeah, that's what he says happens.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was a game we won 3-1, so yeah.
I was actually our leading goal scorer up till Christmas. I was playing right back. I got 6 goals.
You and Inigo Calderon then. Okay, there's now a history here.
But I'm not sure if he's just beaten me now because he scored the other week.
Yeah,
but my ones were championship goals, so I'm saying I'm better than him.
But I have to talk about the return game at Selhurst Park that season. It was a game that's gone into the record books.
Brilliant.
The game notorious for the referee Kelvin Morton and 5 penalties.
Great display.
How many
great
did you give away?
Kelvin. I gave away none.
Yeah?
I gave away absolute none, but he was the worst referee and the worst decisions I've ever seen by a referee during a game.
And not just the penalties.
Oh, it was just horrendous, absolutely horrendous. And the first one, I think, was given away, and he sent off Mike Trusson. So we was down to...
That wasn't unusual, though.
But yeah, Truss used to come in a little bit late, and he was a little bit late. But whether it would be a booking or a sending off, but he sent him straight off. And then he started this array of giving away penalties. So every time they went into our box, either Bright on right went down, and it was a penalty.
Fast forward a few years, Wilfried Zaha.
Well, there's that. But the thing is, for those that don't remember this, it is gone to folklore. Palace got awarded 4 penalties.
Yes,
we missed
got
3.
One. Yes,
and we got one, and which Kerbs tucked away,
top right hand corner.
Yeah, that showed them how to do it. I think they changed their penalty taker every time Palace did.
And then they did because John Pemberton took one. And then at the end of the game, Kelvin Morton actually ran, tried to get off the pitch, but I just ran behind him, just caught him up in time, just to tell him what a great referee he was, and what a good
in
game
Maltese.
He had. In Maltese, and what a good game he had, and that to ignore everyone saying he's a bad referee, and he should carry on.
He should have done
or words to that effect.
Yeah, maybe you should have tripped him up, maybe.
I tell you what, if it had turned round, because that was another trick with Terry Venables. If you're ever going to have a go at a referee, do it behind his back. Because if you're doing it straight in his face, he can book you.
Yeah.
If you're having a go with him behind his back and you're shouting him, he doesn't know who's saying it.
Okay. Mm.
Okay. Well, let's just move on to the season after that, which was started at Barnsley and finished at Wembley.
Yeah.
So was that the only time you played at Wembley?
Yes, it was, yeah. Yeah.
So I mean, it was again fantastic side, but I mean, let's just talk about the 2 legs against Millwall, which were fantastic. We talked about the second leg briefly, but I mean, going into that first game and winning it 4-1, that was unheard of for us. Really, it was unbelievable.
Well, they had Sheringham and Cascarino up front, which was a decent combination. But I remember the game like it was yesterday. I mean, it was a Sunday kickoff, which was great thinking by the Sussex police, because Millwall came down on Friday and smashed the whole of Brighton up and Hove up, which was great.
You never got offered a chance to go to Millwall then, did you? Phil, that's a fine. You got told and told to turn your phone off. Phil's getting all the beers in for everyone.
That was the guys who was telling us not to do it.
Exactly.
Unbelievable.
You outrageous person, Phil.
But yeah, it was a great home leg. I mean, we went 1-0 down. Paul Stevenson scored.
Yeah.
And then we battered them.
Yeah.
We absolutely battered them. But when you got someone like Johnny Byrne up front for you and Mike Small.
Yeah.
And Mike Small, you had to sort of like wind up and let him go. Do you know what I mean? And he was one of these guys.
Again, like Rugby, a gentle giant, but you need to...
Oh, a gentle giant. One of our first games, a little story I'll tell you. One of our first games, when we played at Watford, when Elton John came to the dressing room, Smalley came along, and like all of a sudden we're going to walk out, and there was a guy who was captain of Watford called Joe McLaughlin,
right? Mm-hmm.
Who was a big centre half. He was a massive centre half, and Joe sort of like knew me from Chelsea and things like that. So I was speaking to Joe, and I was telling him, "Yeah, is your move good? Was it good? Yeah. Well, we'll have a chat We'll have a chat after the game so we can have a beer. He went, I'll come in the players' lounge. And then what I'd done, I quickly ran to Mike Small and I said, now be careful, Mick. And he went, what's that? I said, Joe McLaughlin's just told me he's going to beat seven bells of crap out of you.
Yeah.
So, like, be careful, because, like, he's going to do you. Now, he's going to throw his arm. I know what he's like, and he's just told me he's going to do it. Now, Joe McLaughlin had said, what a great fella I was, and have a beer. So what happened was, and I started, come on, let's warm up together. So we started warming up across the pitch, and I could see by the end of about the fourth time we went across, he had smoke coming out of his nostrils. So I said, I said, the first time I get a free kick, you go and stand next to Joe McLaughlin. I'm going to hang the ball up, and I want you to smash him as hard as you can. He went, yes. So five minutes gone, the ball goes down. I shout out, Smalley, go and stand beside him. And the next thing, I hang the ball up. He's gone whack. Now, it happened about five or six times in that first half. Joe McLaughlin did not come out for the second half because he was hammered. He got hammered. We went on to win the game 2-0. Now, Smalley would probably not know that even now. But that's the thing I used to try and do. I used to try and whine to get the best out of people. Some people, you can cajole them, you can speak to them. But other people, you just need to wind up. And
we've Smalley had Adam Virgo on here saying exactly the same. Yeah. I think he said, who was it? He said he used to wind him up. It was one of the coaches. Yeah,
it was
I think it was something like that. He used to, you know, slap him around the face and you know, have a go at him. And then he'd come out, like you say, sort of all
tunnel vision.
Yeah.
Guns blazing. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because apart from that, you'd just be sort of like the person that you are off the pitch.
Do you think the language barrier is what's stopping our players doing that at the moment?
No, I think you can still wind them up quite easily.
Let's hope someone does today. Well,
But like you said, it was a great time. It was a great time for us.
I mean, that's the thing, that getting back to that Millwall game. I mean, the second, third and fourth goals, they were carbon copies of each other. Ball got played over the top, nodded on usually by someone like Codner. Because it was four different scorers, wasn't it? Barham got the first.
Walker.
Codner got one.
And Smalley got one.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like I say, 2, 3 and 4 were all carbon copies of each other. I mean, the Millwall line had just pushed right up.
It was kind of like a breakaway, wasn't it?
They were, each time.
But it was one
of all within about 10 minutes of each other.
That was one of Bob Codner's better games.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was. What was your opinions of him? Because he did tend to blow hot and cold.
Rob was a guy who liked to get forward and not track back a lot. So a lot of the time, I think he's my guest this afternoon, by the way. So I've got to be careful. But he didn't like tracking back. He was what you call a person who'd like to play in a hole with no responsibilities. Well, that's what you call him now.
Yeah. Did you call him lazy at the time? Come on, call
him. No, he wasn't. I wouldn't say he was lazy. How about this one? Misunderstood. That's good, isn't it? That's a good word. That covers everything.
It's misunderstood as a mute.
Okay, we've got to move it on because we are running out of time. But let's go to the final at Wembley. It's been quite well documented about Barry Lloyd's treatment of Gary Nelson going into that game. I mean, what was your viewpoint on that?
Listen, we didn't have Johnny Byrne. Mm-hmm. Nelson had his differences with the gaffer. You all have your differences with your gaffer. You know, it's never a smooth thing. If you sign a 5-year, and Nelson had been there 3 years anyway.
But being top scorer, he was.
Yeah, he was top scorer before. But when you've got people like, I mean, Johnny Byrne didn't play in the final, but they made him sub, but he was injured, really. If you're going into that final, my only thing about that final is we played the wrong side. We played the wrong formation. Mm-hmm. He wanted to play 5 at the back. If you look throughout that season, we played a 4. Mm. Patesy had come in. Patesy had done a great job. I've played with Patesy since I've been 11 years of age. He picked the wrong side. He's gone in there. He played to play Iovan, Colin Pates, Nicky Bissett, me wide right, and I think it was it Gats? Was it Gats or
Chappers?
It was Chappers, left-hand side. But we had no pace. We had no pace at the back. He should have gone in there, like we played in the semi-final. Why change your formation when you've just beaten one of the best teams 4-1 at home, 2-1 away from home? Why change your team?
It was. I mean, it was a disappointing day for us. I mean, Notts County did.
For you, God, how do you imagine we felt?
Well, we paid. But the thing is,
he didn't get his promotion bonus.
Oh yeah,
no. Well, 35, another one.
Yeah. The other thing I remember about it was was the, I'm going to use the word carefully, gamesmanship of Neil Warnock's side. Was that any time that we got a bit of a head of momentum going, down went one of their players, yes. Ref, I'm injured. That was so, you could tell it was so blatant.
Nothing's changed with him, has it?
Not really, no.
No, and with Neil Warnock in general, really.
There's one thing I'm always curious about. I remember Manchester United playing one of their first ever European games. I think it was against Real Madrid in the late 50s, early 60s, something like that. And Man U were winning. And one of the Madrid players went down near the touchline. You know, oh, I'm injured. And a couple of the United players then just picked up the player and took him off the pitch, just plonked him off the pitch. And you think, why can't players do that nowadays? What happened then is the Real Madrid player just rolled back onto the pitch.
That happened on Tuesday night, didn't it?
It did a couple of times. But you just think, you know, hang on, Notts County player, right, get off. You know, yeah. Can't you, I don't suppose you can, but you're tempted to just say, pick him up and get him off. Right, can we play on now, please, ref? But
I've actually pushed people off the pitch before. I remember playing against, when I come from Watford to Brighton, and they had a bloke, the right winger, Neil Rimmer. I think it was Neil Rimmer, who was going to roast me before the game. He was telling everyone he's going to roast me, he's going to run me, he's going to do this. And of course, we played at Watford, and at 69 minutes or 65 minutes, I kept on saying to him, second half, you're going to be off soon. Stay by the sideline. You're going to be off. Talking to him, yeah. And he was, you know, obviously saying nice things back to me. And at 65 minutes, 66 minutes, his number went up, and I actually lifted him by his shoulder pads, like shoulder pads, and walked him over and said, "Get off. Sit down with the other kids."
Yeah. But I mean, obviously the players were very, very disappointed after that. But one player in particular had an interesting interview after the game. Now, I just want to know how much stick he actually got, or if the players did actually know about it. Because Dean Wilkins was interviewed after the game.
He was in tears, wasn't he?
He was crying.
I can't believe we lost 3-0. It was 3-1, Dean. You scored. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I did, didn't I?
He forgot he scored.
But
you used to room with him, didn't you?
Yeah, I used to room with him. Yeah, Dino was a consummate pro. Great lad. I know you used to call him Wendy.
Yeah,
didn't you?
Tenacious, yeah. In the tackle, wasn't he?
He didn't like a tackle. Dino weren't a tackling man. But he was a good pro, and he did went about his training and went about his business in a really professional manner.
So the player that you saw, you could see him go on to be, well, either coach/manager later. I mean, we've had players on here say he's a brilliant coach, not a great man manager, but I guess you could see that, you know. Sort of.
Do you know what? I couldn't really see that in him. I didn't think he'd be strong enough to possibly to go on, but he has. And everyone says about his coaching, he's brilliant. I can't mention the managing side, because obviously, but you're saying that, he got sacked when they were sixth and seventh in the league, so he couldn't have done a bad job. And he had loads of Sussex players coming in.
Yeah,
that's a good one for you, Dino.
That was his dream, wasn't it, to have an entire Sussex-born and bred team?
Yeah, no.
And it wasn't far off it. It was seven or eight of them, wasn't it?
Far off it, but I mean, you know, it's one of those things. It's like you at when you were at Swansea. You know, you need that blend. You know, they always said the blend of youth and experience. You need sort of like the free running of kids, but you also need some wise heads on the pitch as well.
Listen, the senior pros at club run the club.
Yeah,
it's always the senior pros. When I went to Chelsea, you had Ronnie Harris, Mickey Droy. They run the club.
It does help that they're about 7 foot tall.
Yeah. Ronnie Harris, but yeah.
Tell us what Martin Chivers said to you the first time you met him then.
Martin Chivers, I played against Martin Chivers. I was playing for Chelsea reserves against Norwich reserves, and he kept on looking at me, and obviously I knew about Martin Chivers, you know, he's international, great player, and he kept on looking at me, and I couldn't really look at him or speak to him. And the next thing, he looked at me, he said, "You Chivers?" And I went, "Yeah." He said, "Right." He said, "There's one difference between me and you." He said, "You're going up and I'm on the way out."
And on that note, so are we. That's all we've actually got time for. So, of course, thank you to Gary Chivers. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much.
Will you come in again?
Yeah, I'll come in again, yeah.
And, of course, to shirt guru Phil Shelley.
Thank you very much.
To Louise Shelley, who's grinning at the back. And, of course, to Alan Wares. I'm Eddie Packham. We'll see you again next week. Cheers.